It is well accepted that Jaws is an all-time great film, but its progeny don't rank nearly as high. Two True Freaks is proud to present Is It Jaws, where Paul Spitero and Sean Whalen are joined by an all-star list of guest hosts to review old and new films and place them on the Jaws scale, where they're ranked from Jaws to Jaws 4. Of course, for the purposes of the show, that scale does take some liberties with their actual ratings. Sure, movies that are given the ranking of Jaws are considered classic films with few flaws, if any. A ranking of Jaws 2 indicates that the film is very good and worthy of repeated viewings. A Jaws 3 ranking indicates the film was okay, but that's all. A Jaws 4 means it's ranked as a bad movie. Oh, and if you ever saw Back to the Future Part 2, you know that there's a Jaws 19. That ranking indicates that the movie is so incredibly bad that it's actually fun to watch as a result. So please join Paul and Sean as they ask the ever-important question, is it Jaws?
Two years ago, the name Arthur Fleck hit Gotham like a hurricane.
The trial of the century.
They believe Arthur Fleck to be some kind of martyr. Well, he's not. He's a monster.
When I first saw Joker, when I saw you,
the whole world smiles with you.
For once in my life, I didn't feel so alone anymore.
When you're laughing, oh, when you're laughing. Someone who needs me.
How about you, Arthur? Do you still think you're a star?
Showtime.
Suspicion that we're not giving the people what they want.
It's okay, baby. Let's give the people what they want.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Is It Yours? I'm Paul Spitero, and I am joined today by my good buddy, Mr. Sean Whalen.
It's a pleasure to be here.
And it is a pleasure to have you here. It is also a pleasure to have our other friend, Mr. Jim Segulin, with us.
How's it going, eh?
It's going good, Jim. How you doing?
Doing awesome, man. Doing awesome.
So we are here today at Jim's suggestion that we cover, I got to try and make sure I say this right, Joker Folie à Deux. I'll be right up front with this. I had not seen this. I liked the first Joker movie. I didn't love it. I liked it. And then when this one came out and I heard people talking about it and I heard the bad reviews and the internet buzz and, oh, it's a musical and it's terrible and it's really like in the face of the viewers, you don't want to see this. So I didn't see it. I actually listened to the internet buzz, which is not something I generally want to do. Mm-hmm. I don't like listening to the internet buzz. I don't like the internet buzz. So I got a text from Sean saying he was talking to Jim and they thought this might be a good movie to cover. And, you know, maybe this is a genuine Jaws 4 that we're looking at, or a Jaws 19, something, you know, this could be fun. And at that point, neither of us had seen it, but Jim had seen it. So I knew that my wife didn't like the first Joker. I knew she wouldn't want to sit through this. So I made this my on the treadmill movie. And I watched it. And I'm going to tell you, this discussion for me is a question of, is this a guilty pleasure or is this a movie that I liked and I think the reviews are wrong? And I'm going to start that off by defining how I define guilty pleasure, because I know Scott Gardner and I had a discussion about that one day, and it always comes back to me that I mentioned guilty pleasure and Scott became very defiant on me. He was like, I don't feel guilty for anything I like. And I was like, well, that's not how I define guilty pleasure, because I don't feel guilty for anything I like. If I like it, too bad on anybody who doesn't. I define guilty pleasure as a movie that I can say without concern that I think it is probably a bad movie. Mm-hmm. But despite that, I like it anyway. So the question to me is this a bad movie that I liked, because I did like it, or is this a decent movie that got bad reviews? So that's where I stand on it. So why don't we go around the table? Sean, what's your initial thoughts?
So as far as guilty pleasures, when it comes to superhero films in general, let's go. We've talked on this show before about growing up, and especially like 70s superhero movies, things like that, they were all over the place. You had certain things like Christopher Reeve's Superman and stuff like that, that like just hit it out of the park. And then, you know, we got things like the Hulk and Thor crossover, which is a whole other category of choice. But
okay, just to be clear, you're talking about the Hulk and Thor crossovers in the movie Daredevil, in the Daredevil TV movies.
The Hulk TV movies. There was a Hulk and Thor TV movie, which you and I have not covered yet, so I'm not going to go too crazy on that in case we get to it. But these things are not the same. We had some TV movies with Spider-Man as well that were at the time, you know, like, wow, we got Spider-Man on TV in live action. DC stuff, I'm a big DC junkie. We do a DC podcast outside of this, and I'm usually the one bringing to the table, we've got to see this direct-to-DVD release. Let's talk about it. If I can see it in the theater, I rush to the theater. I didn't see this one in the theater. That's where you mentioned the internet buzz. That's how much the internet buzz hit me, which never happens. I'm usually the known for being the apologist when it comes to DC stuff. This, I should be the fish on the hook being dragged in. I didn't see this one in the theater. That's so unusual for me because I liked the first one. And
let's add to that the thought that you have the monthly pass. So it would cost you no more to go see this movie than the time it would take to watch it.
Well, I don't have the monthly pass anymore.
Hang on.
Let's go back though. At the time this film came out, I did. So you're 100% correct. I had the monthly pass and didn't go see this. I did buy it. So, and I've had it sitting there for a significant amount of time because I have, you know, I collect the movies and that type of thing. I'm like, I'm going to eventually get to it. And this might be one that I bought and I only watch once. Not knowing that at the time I was going to be a regular co-host on Is It Jaws? And because I think this movie predated you and I doing this as a regular thing, maybe as far as timeline wise. It's pretty darn close. So this was a movie that walking into it, I thought for sure, Like, this is going to be my Jaws 4. I'm going to have real issues with this film. I'm kind of shocked. There's a conversation to be had here, and I'm with you. I'm still not 100% sure how I'm rating this today. I'm wrapping my head around that, and I really, this is an example of where I need this discussion to get me where I'm actually at. This one I watched twice. I watched it as my treadmill watch, and then I watched it again because I'm like, I don't want this to be new car smell for me. I want to kind of, how do I really feel about this movie? I've watched it twice. I didn't feel like it was an ordeal. And I want to talk about this film, I think, and the storyline and what's going on here, because it's not at all what I expected. I expected this constant musical, which is kind of how it was billed. And this film did not wind up being what I was being told it was going to be. And I think that's why I'm in the place. I am in the place. I will bury the lead. I liked this movie, and I'm surprised I liked this movie. But it's because I don't think this is the movie I was sold that it was going to be. And that's what's really surprising me, because everything I was hearing that was so terrible about it, I'm like, but that's not this movie.
You know, we've talked in the past about expectations.
Yes.
And how they influence your ultimate decision on a movie, or your ultimate pleasure or lack thereof when you see a movie. And maybe the fact that our expectations were so low made it easier for us to enjoy this. And that's something to explore as we're talking about it.
The one piece I want to say, though, again, I walked in expecting this to be completely a musical, because that was, to me, I was hearing over and over again that this sequel was a musical. There is music used in this, and it's used for a very specific purpose, which we'll talk about as we get through there. But this was not the musical I was expecting to walk in and see. This film wound up being something very different from how this was being sold to me. So I want to talk about this. It's going to be fun. I'm sorry, Jim. It's really your turn. Jim, tell us, because you were the one that suggested this. Yeah. And we wouldn't be here today if you hadn't just said to me on random, like, hey, you want to talk about Joker? And I'm like, yeah, you know what? I co-host on this film review show. So maybe instead of Raging Bullets, why don't we do it here? Because it'd be fun for the three of us to really tackle this thing. And thank you, Paul, for being willing to go on this journey.
For suggesting it, hey, actually.
And here's the thing. When this was out in the theaters, I did not see it flat out. I have I loved, absolutely loved the first one. I was like, this is an absolute brilliant movie. This is a great way to take a comic book character and not make him so comic bookish, but still retain the heart and soul of who the Joker was. I loved what they did. So when the second movie was announced, I was actually excited to see it. You know, and I heard the elements of musical. I was like, oh, that's going to be kind of neat. You know, because I like musicals. I live theater, all that stuff. I love that. So I was excited for this. And when opening night came out, I couldn't go see it because I had some stuff happening. And I started talking to people I trusted, you know, because I had a friend of mine at work who loved the first Joker as well. Immediately said, hey, I couldn't see it. Don't give me any spoilers. How was it? And she was like, it's an abomination. I'm like, whoa. Because normally she's not a person who would go over the top like that. She's like, they completely ruined what made the good stuff, made the first Joker so good. And you know, she wasn't even talking about the musical side. That didn't bother her, you know. And I was like, whoa. And then you start reading the internet, start reading all this stuff, and I was like, I'm not going to waste my time going to the movie theater, because I was dealing with a lot of stuff going on with my dad and all that stuff, and a lot of family stuff going on. So I didn't want to just waste the time. Well, fast forward to when I first saw this, it's on HBO. And so it's, you know, you periodically can see it, you know, and you're channel surfing. And I was just channel surfing and I hit it. And I was like, and it was the courtroom scene where the Joker fires his lawyer. And that's the scene I saw. And I was like, oh, this is going to be awesome. I don't know what, you know, Lee was talking about. This is going to be great. You know, so then I stopped watching it, because I wanted to watch it from the beginning. And, you know, and that's when I was like, no, I agree with Lee. This was horrible. I was like, holy crud. You know, and I was just like, you know, this was Back to the Future Jaws for me when I first watched through. And it took the second watch through for me not to think of it as an abomination. But I'm still in the boat of people who did not like this movie. You know, I still do not like this movie. And I think for me, the one of the big reasons is this could have been epic. This could have been an epic story. You know, that courtroom scene, that for me was an epic, could have been an epic scene, but that was like, they dropped the ball, you know, and I'm disappointed in what they did. The acting, spot on. Again, Joaquin Phoenix, you know, Lady Gaga, as well as all of the supporting cast, that prison guard, you know, the lawyers, the person who played Harvey Dent, they did some brilliant acting in this, but for me, they did the Dolph Lundgren Punisher. They were afraid to go full comic book, and they held back on the full comic book. You know,
as far as the courtroom piece, and I don't mean to derail our normal way of handling this one, just because you were talking about that. There's an area where I might disagree with you a little bit here. This movie is not meant to be the comic book. I think the first one set the rules of, we're not following the comics with this one. The courtroom scene in particular, with what they were doing with Harley on this, I think is where she had an issue with him. He stopped playing along. So your feeling, I think, is the way you're supposed to feel. You're supposed to feel let down that, like, oh, wait, Arthur's no longer playing the game. Arthur's seeing that Joker is not this separate thing. Joker's not this amazing cult leader. He stopped being Charlie Manson.
Yeah.
And that's where she's out. I'm like, I'm done with this guy. So the way you're feeling, you left the courtroom with Harley.
Yes. I left the courtroom with Harley.
That's what you're supposed to do. I think that's where it worked. I'm like, I get why she left. So I think you're feeling what the film's intending for you to feel. I do think it was right. And I do feel it was like, I'm surprised I'm saying this, but I'm sitting here, I'm like, this is where it's working. I'm like, I get why she left. I understand the character. You're right that they weren't going full comic booky, but I don't think it was because I think their bold move was not going full comic book.
Because I'm agreeing with you 100%, Sean. That is, I think, where they subverted expectations. Mm-hmm. And that subversion of expectations is what led to the negative reviews.
Yes.
And the thing is, I don't know about the negative reviews, but the negative perception,
mm-hmm,
that way. And then people just landed on the fact that it's a musical to voice their criticism, but I don't think that's true. I don't think the fact that it's a musical is what truly bothered people. I think they were bothered because they didn't get the Joker who embraced his Jokerness,
right,
and became Batman's archenemy. And I think that's where people were disappointed with this movie. And I'm actually kind of okay with that because it led me to someplace I didn't expect to go. And that was kind of fun for me as far as I was concerned. I think that's the case. And then just to add the thought, and we could keep talking about this, but the whole musical aspect of it. Now, I am a fan to an extent of musicals. I mean, there's some that I like a lot. There's some that I don't. But I certainly don't have any preconceived notion that if it's a musical, I'm down on it. I mean, West Side Story is one of my favorite movies ever. We've discussed Singing in the Rain, which I enjoyed. We did that on the show at one time, which I enjoyed that very much. So I have no problem with the concept of musicals. And I have a great fondness for the Great American Songbook, which is what most of the songs from this movie are from. And that actually subverted my expectations because when people said, oh, it's a musical and Lady Gaga's playing Harley Quinn, I expected Lady Gaga type music. Mm-hmm. Now, Lady Gaga did a tour with Tony Bennett where they did the Great American Songbook, so I shouldn't have been so surprised by this, but I expected more of her, you know, pop music. And while I don't hate her pop music, I'm not a fan of it either. So I thought, I'm not going to like this movie for multiple reasons. And that whole musical aspect of it is going to be one of them. So it's interesting to kind of look at it from that perspective. What I got was a movie I didn't expect to get. And sometimes I enjoy that, sometimes I don't. But if I go in expecting it to be negative and I get a movie that I didn't expect, there's a better chance I'm going to enjoy it.
And here's the thing. I'm going to stand on the fact that I didn't like the movie, but part of it is I didn't like it because it didn't go the way I wanted it to go. And that's, you know, as I said, the acting's brilliant. They did a brilliant job. They got a great emotional reaction from me. Everybody did their part. Just, again, they're brilliant actors. And I loved the usage of the musical as to kind of show the descent into madness. I thought that was brilliant, especially because you've got two people who are musically talented in these roles. You know, so I was like, yes, let's, you know, go with it. But, you know, as I said, they didn't, you know, them not going full comic book, for me, I think was the miscue. And I think that's part of really the thing that I'm locking on to my dislike of the movie is because they didn't go over the top with the Joker. In my head, this should have ended with an over the top Joker, him playing an over the top Joker with Harley Quinn. And to your point, Sean, I left the courtroom with Harley. When she left, I left, you know, but it is something that I was like, I think this movie could have been epic if they would have done that.
Who did you think the Joker was in the first movie? Because it set a rules for me. And by the way, I want to say one thing. You feeling the way you do about the film and about any scene or any sequence, stick with it. That's what you feel. I'm presenting what my perspective is on the film, which I'm shocked by because I was expecting to hate this. And I don't, which I'm shocked by. But I'm going back to the first film. They set aside, I think, a certain set of rules that this is not going to be the comic book. So I walked into this sequel, at least still having the rules of the original movie in mind. Who do you think this Joker is? And there's no wrong answer to that because you're expecting more from him. Yes. So I'm curious as to who did you think this Joker was going to be, or who do you think this Joker is, and how did they fail you on that? Because I think that's intriguing.
Okay. At the end of the first, you know, one of the things I loved about the first Joker was that he wasn't the comic book, you know, when everything got started and got rolling, and he didn't become the Joker because he was thrown in the chemical vat by the bat or any of that. I love that. But at the end of that movie, when he was getting locked, when he, you know, you think about the pure chaos that was happening at the end of the movie after he kills, that brilliance of the chaos of the end of the movie, that to me was like, we're getting the birth of the Joker. And this is the birth of the Joker, not the chemical vat by the bat, not the thing. This is the beginning of the Joker. And that was something I was thinking, okay, this is going to be, you know, this is how the Joker comes out. You know, this is, you know, and so yes, in the first movie, he wasn't the comic book Joker, but I felt like it was the beginning of the birth. That's why. So going into the second one, I was really thinking we were going to get full Joker. By the end of two, we're going to have full Joker, you know, and you figure, you know, that courtroom scene is the scene I saw, you know, and I was like, you know, because that really was, you know, could have been the point of the tipping of the scale to the Joker. And I was like, you know, so when I actually started watching the second movie, I still had in my head, this is going to be the birth of the Joker. So there is a problem with the power of what you're thinking this movie is going to be about, and what you think the movie should be about, you know, really does affect judgment on it. And I fully admit that if this was just a side movie about courtroom, about some guy who kills some people who's a bit crazy, you know, I would probably look at it differently. But because it's the Joker, because it's Gotham, because all that, I've got these notions in my head. And, you know, it is affecting my opinion of the movie.
And I think that is maybe a distinct difference. Well, that's where you're at on this one, Paul, because I looked at the end of the first movie as the birth of Charles Manson or a similar cult leader. And I think this movie starts off with the after effects of that. You've got people dressed like the Joker outside of the courthouse who have bought in and they've been drinking his Kool-Aid. When he fails some of his closest in the courtroom scene when he, at the end of the movie of this one, we've still got people still drinking the Kool-Aid. They're still dressed as the Joker. They're still looking for him to be the Joker, even when he says he's not. Yeah. They're still looking for him to be the Joker. So this is more a movie about a guy who subverts society, and people connect with him because of the fact that he says, you know, hey, I'm broken, and look what everybody else has done to me that's made me broken. That's why you've got people that are like rallying behind him and all of that. I do feel like they picked up from my expectations of the previous movie is The Birth of Charles Manson, not our comic book Joker. But that's maybe where we're in a different place, which is, I think, a good context for people that were looking for the direct comic book like you are, as far as that. Paul, where were you?
See, I think we're in three different places, which is always cool when we do this.
I do too.
When I watched the first one, I really kind of saw it from the almost from the critic's eye a little bit, because I didn't totally immerse myself in it. And I felt like I saw it as I still feel it is an homage to Martin Scorsese. And I thought, I kept thinking Taxi Driver and King of Comedy. Taxi Driver and King of Comedy. I kept going back and forth with the two of them and seeing the parallels in what was going on there. Now, I was, and it's one of the reasons why I had low expectations for this one, because I figured it's not going to continue that trend, and it's going to kind of take it into the real DC world of him becoming Batman's enemy and him just, you know, looking for anarchy and all of this stuff that we've seen before. And I didn't really want to see this one go to that. I was looking at this as an Elseworlds view. I was totally keeping it separate in my mind from the DC universe on a whole. I mean, we did have, you know, some talk of Bruce Wayne's father in the first one. So there was an element of it being part of the DC universe, but it didn't embrace that. And I didn't want it to embrace that. So, you know, when we got Harlequin introduced in this one, and she wasn't the animated version of her, she was very, very different from it. You know, I kind of was good with that. And when he actually rejected the Joker persona to become, you know, to be Arthur Fleck, at the end of the movie, I kind of applaud that decision, and I know that's where it subverted people's expectations, and that's a big reason why a lot of people didn't like it. I ended up liking it for that reason. So, you know, I thought the themes that went through this were pretty good. I did see somewhere where they said, this one, while the first one had that Martin Scorsese element to it, that this one had an element of Natural Born Killers, that movie, which I personally, honestly, have never seen. So I can't actually say what I think of that movie because I've never seen it. But that was more along the lines of what this movie was presenting. So I'm kind of cool with that because I liked the homage, attitude of the first one. And if this one had that, I, you know, probably give another depth to it that I would enjoy seeing if I had seen that movie. But even without seeing that movie, I kind of enjoyed my experience of watching this. I like to see, that the character was very edgy. You didn't know if he was going to go over the top at any given moment. There were a lot of scenes here where the suspense was built up because he's in a position where he could go full out Joker, and you're waiting to see if that happens, and then it doesn't. Now, I don't know if that suspense holds up on a second viewing. You're probably in a better position to tell me that because I only watched it the one time. But I did like that element of it as I watched it. And I liked the complexity of the relationship with Harlequin, how she really loved the anarchy aspect of the Joker, and she didn't love Arthur Fleck, so that she rejected him when he embraced the Arthur Fleck part of his personality. So I thought this movie had, you know, a complex narrative to it, as, you know, again, going into it, you know, hearing it's a musical, I'm thinking this is just going to be silly stupidity. That's really what I thought. So for it to present a complex narrative and music that I like, that was a good combination for me.
The
Let's dive heavily into Arthur Fleck and Lady Gaga. We're already there anyway, because I think the musical aspect of that, that's where it starts to come in. How did they use music in this? And really, one of the things that this started establishing in this is the idea of Arthur Fleck, this Joker, which I agree with you on the Elseworlds end. I've watched the first one as an Elseworlds movie. This one I did watch as an Elseworlds movie. And if you're not familiar with Elseworlds, for people listening to this, DC Comics has established with Batman where they do these stories where none of the comic book rules are like beholden. You're just going to tell really great stories with these characters where you can do wacky things that you would never be able to do in comic book continuity. It just, as long as you've got a really strong story, you can take these characters and really make them malleable. Which this film is not beholden in any way, shape, or form to the comic books and what it's doing. I like the use of music in this, because when I thought musical, I thought, like, I'm going to hate this because of the fact that we're forcing musical numbers into sequences where they don't belong. Music was, for the most part, it may have been almost entirely this, to when Joker was in his head and putting that shell around himself, sheltering himself from the world. So we were seeing Joker's idealized version of the world, or even when things were going sour for him, his interpretation of what was going on with the world. These were things that were not really happening. So I thought music was taking us out of, we got the real world and what's really happening to Arthur Fleck here. We've got what's going on in his head musically over here. I liked that tool. I didn't think I was going to, because I thought this was something completely different than it was going to be. I actually loved the music that was being used. I loved the storytelling aspect of, we're in this lunatic's head and we're getting to see him really kind of go through the song and dance of, this is my daydream of what's going on. And I quite liked delving into his psyche. Lady Gaga's music, I think she's a very good actress. I really do. The films I've seen her in, I actually like her a lot as an actress. And I'm glad that, to your point, Paul, I actually like her pop music, but it did not belong here. I like that the musical choices fit and crafted the environment that they were doing here. I loved the use of it as this daydream kind of tool, that in a way that I did not expect at all. It kind of gave that separation and made us feel like we were in the dreams, which is one of the areas where I actually like the movie. I'm like, oh, we're in this lunatic's head and I actually kind of like what's going on here.
And that is a part of the movie I loved. I was flat, even though I can say I didn't like the movie, I can say I loved the usage of the music. Because again, it's the descent into Arthur's descent into the madness. It's what's going on inside his head. But the one thing I did love was the sequence when movie night went up in flames and they were trying to escape or weren't trying to escape, whatever version. During that sequence, Arthur singing in his head, but Lady Gaga was singing for real. So as they're running through the parking lot, she was actually singing. You know, because later when they get captured, the one guard says, you and the lady who was singing. So she was actually singing out loud. Now, Arthur wasn't. I 100% believe Arthur was just, you know, in his head. But she was actually singing while they were. So who knows what she was actually singing, whether she was singing the part she was singing, you know, that we saw, or whether it was something different. So that for me was, again, a really neat little twist to it. And before watching anything, I heard that, you know, Harley Quinn wasn't going to be a shrink that fell in love with the Joker. And at first I was like, that's going to be interesting. And I do like how they played her in, you know, how she was, you know, a fanboy of the Joker. I thought that was kind of neat.
So you're making an interesting point, Jim, about how she's not the psychologist. You know, she's not, doesn't do that as a career. But I actually did like when she was talking about her background, because she was giving him a story. Remember, she was not telling him the truth about who she actually was. And she voluntarily put herself in there versus the fact that they put her in there. I loved as she started revealing some of her truths, or other people started revealing some of her truths.
Arthur's lawyer gave a lot of this up. And again, I like the fact that this Harley did have the degree, did have the psychology degree. So again, as you're watching it, you're wondering, okay, is she truly a fanboy of Joker, or is she trying to just use him for her own purposes? What's going on? So again, those kind of layering was kind of neat. But one of the things that, again, it's one of the things that, you know, I so wanted full Joker, and they get to tease you and then they drop you off. Tease you. Nope. And again, I understand why they did it, you know, and, you know, like, the acting's brilliant when they pulled it off, but it was just because I'm like, enough of the tease. Let's go. And I kept wanting that, and I didn't get that. And the thing, some of the stuff with Harley, same deal. Brilliant job on creating her, but it got to the point I'm like, oh no, they dropped it off. Ah, dang it.
Because you were looking for comic book.
I was looking for comic book. And I think that is one of the big problems I have with this, because I was looking for comic book ending.
But you know, since the first one, they were not going for the right. comic book in the first one either.
Yes. But here's the thing. They didn't go full comic book in the first one, but they started the tease leading to we could get full comic book. And we had enough of the glimpses of the birth of Joker that we could have gotten that.
So the only thing I'm going to say is, for intention of the movie, they never intended to go there.
Yes.
And they've been very, very clear they never intended to go there. So if you're like, I wanted them to go there, I needed them to go there, you're not wrong in feeling that way. But I'm saying, as far as intention for the film, they never intended for this to be the comic book Joker. This was an exploration of this man who was going through it. And I think that's an interesting piece.
It's a funny thing, too, because I usually, in most of my comic book movies, I'm exactly where Jim is in most of the cases. I want them to be as true to the comics as possible. And I am offended. I literally offended when it feels like they're embarrassed of the comic book version. And that they're trying to do something different because of that.
Yeah.
That really does bother me when they do that. And yet, for some reason, in this one, I think it's because I knew they were going so far from the comic book that there was never going to be an attempt to make it the comic book. And the fact that it was Arthur Fleck and then we had his origin in the last movie, I never thought of him as the comic book Joker. He was a totally different entity in my mind. So I was able to separate the comic book version from this and not have that bother me in this case.
The court case, one of the things I thought that was interesting that they did with that was establishing the fact that there was a long history, and it goes back to the first film, of him using the Joker, using his they talked about his mother, how she said something to him when he was a kid that set him off on this pathway of, I want to be this clown. I want to entertain people. And he crafted this illusion around himself of what this entertainer was like. And she was like, he's not even funny. And I thought was real interesting. To see him in the court come to the realization, I do think the dramatic piece in the courtroom, whether you like it or not, and I'm not, there's nothing wrong with feeling either way about it. There was a real coming full circle of realizing, oh, mom's right. I do this. The Joker is my shell. I put this on myself as a persona, which contradicts the movement that people were following. Because if he's not really the Joker, if he doesn't really believe in this, then what happens to the movement? Like this thing, this game that we're all playing together that Harley was attracted to, now all of a sudden it's been completely derailed, and she's completely interested in the man when he's just Arthur Fleck.
Yeah.
Who is a mess.
But I think that's also an element of this movie that's interesting to try and consider, is the way the public perceives him and how, you know, he's put up there as some sort of a hero in the eyes of people, to the point where they, you know, spoilers, by the way, where they blow up the courtroom to help him to escape and to perpetuate the anarchy that he no longer is embracing. So, you know, there's a complex relationship between his public persona and himself. And I found that fascinating to watch while being entertained by the music.
Here's the interesting thing with this, you know, again, first watch through versus second watch through. You know, the second watch through, I can really appreciate the acting. I really appreciate, you know, the emotion that was given. You know, like that, the courtroom scene you're talking about, the first watch through, I was like, dude, this would be a chance for you to go full Joker. And you didn't do it. I'm like, but then second watch through, I love how, you know, Joaquin Phoenix was really portraying the, this isn't me, guys, leave me alone. And just the emotion that he brought to that role. So again, talented acting throughout this movie. So it's, you know, I personally disagree with the choices the director made and the script made. And again, that's part of, you know, my dislike for it is I disagree with the direction they went with. I would have rather they went this way versus that way. And, you know, so, you know, again, I stick with, I don't like it, but again, I can't say it's a bad movie. I'll never say this is a bad movie. Yeah.
I'm just going to chime in with just the fact that, Jim, you need to be certain this is a safe place for you to have a different opinion.
Yes.
I don't like the movie. We're different. I dislike the movie. But again, I'll never say this is a bad movie. You know, so, you know, it's well done. It's a well-crafted movie, well-acted, some really cool-looking sequences. And I love the musical side of it. I thought that was, you know, because again, I'm a fan of Lady Gaga, not her pop stuff, but just, I've seen so many interviews with her and just, you know, just her just being her. And I'm like, she's not this weird pop star that I thought she was initially. You know, she's actually a very musically talented person. I remember an interview where she was, you know, she was with Julian Lennon playing John Lennon's piano, the infamous The Piano. And she was playing it, you know, and she did a brilliant job playing it and singing. And all these fans were trashing it. How can she touch that piano? That's John Lennon's piano. And everyone's in rage. And the best comment came from Julian. He's like, if you knew my father, you would know he would have wanted her to play it. It's a piano. It's meant to be played. You know, and yeah. I still to this day, I always think about that moment when she's like just, you know, she's just playing the piano. And it was just like, you know, that's the kind of the style that she's got and what she brings for me. And I'm like, so I was a fan. I'm a fan of hers. But again, I disagree with the movie's direction. I disagree with choices made.
I'm agreeing with everything that you're saying as far as like your reasons for feeling that way. And I think one of the reasons why I love the movie is because Lee feels the exact same way you do. And I think it's the brilliant part of all this. She went into the prison. She wanted to get pregnant by him. And that was her intention. Like, she did whatever she did to get into the cell with him. And there's some allusion there that she may have gone to some lengths to get into that cell with him for the purpose of having hopefully getting pregnant. That was her intention there. I don't doubt it. Because she was so enamored by this cult leader and the mystique of this cult leader, because remember, she painted his face. She's like, I want, you know, I need to see your face. I need you to be you. I do think that she was pretty convinced that there's a possibility there might some shenanigans and craziness might happen and he might escape. But she was also prepared for the fact that he might be martyred for the cause. And she was happy to go along with either or and to have the son of this godlike leader that in her mind was being crafted here because of the whole movement thing. And when he stopped playing along, she's done because he escaped. He's on the stairs with her and he's there as Arthur Fleck saying, we can do this. We can go off together. She didn't want that. She wanted the craziness of the Joker. She wanted the mystique she wanted. And when he stopped playing along, there is nothing there for her. I'm worried. Did she have the kid? Whatever. I was left with the end of this film wanting to find out, was she really pregnant? If she was really pregnant, what happened to the kid? Did she have the kid? You know, and all of those pieces, because she was done. Like the cutting of the hair and all that kind of stuff. She was completely done at that point in time with anything to do with Arthur Fleck. Because he ended the dream. And I loved that aspect of the film, which I did not expect because I'm with Paul and you, actually. I normally like a whole bunch of comic book in my films. And this is not normal. Like, I usually like the Elseworlds that skirt close to the line and play around with things a little bit. And this is not that at all.
No, not even close.
Now here, let's go to the baby. Do you guys think she was actually pregnant? Because by first watching, I was 100% convinced she was just lying. She was just saying that to manipulate the Joker or to manipulate Arthur, you know, and part of me still thinks that, but there's a part of me that's wondering if she actually was pregnant. And, you know, I'm probably like 90-10 convinced she was just lying to manipulate him. But there is still that 10% that says maybe she was actually pregnant.
Yeah, I'm in the same boat as you. As I was watching it, I was thinking she's lying to manipulate him, because, especially when we found out that she lied about other things in her life to him to try and gain his favor. So I was convinced of that. But by the time it ended, I was thinking, well, I don't know. She might be pregnant. She might not. I don't know. But it didn't really affect my overall viewing. So I kind of didn't really dwell on that very much. But I'm more leaning towards she was, which was why she was so willing to just kind of give him up when he changed his perspective, because she had what she wanted at that point, or she had what she needed, whatever you want to consider it. So I kind of, I'm kind of leaning in that direction now. But I like, and I usually don't like this, I like the fact that it was nebulous.
Yeah,
me too. I think it's definitely an if she was pregnant or not. I don't trust. That's one of the things they established the rules. I don't trust what she said. So that doesn't mean, though, that she wasn't. And it also means that I don't trust what she would do with that kid afterwards, if she was.
Well, we're talking Joker 3, the son of the Joker, you know.
I hope not.
Yeah, that's what we're talking.
I think you've got zero chance of that.
I wanted to talk a little bit about the music, because I heard something after I saw it that I was not thinking while I watched it. While I was watching it, I was thinking that Joaquin Phoenix, you know, did an okay job for somebody who's not a singer performing these songs, you know, equivalent of if you go to a karaoke night and you get somebody who's pretty decent at it. So that's the way I saw him. With her, I said, okay, this is a trained singer who's doing things, you know, largely a cappella, and doing a pretty decent job because she's got just a nice voice. And then what I heard afterwards with him was consistent, but with her, I heard she actually tried to not perform as well as she could, that she toned it down a level to make herself sound more amateurish, which surprised me, and I didn't really hear that as I was watching it. But I don't have enough of a trained ear to know. I thought she sounded good, so I'm curious what you guys thought.
I 100% thought she toned it down. And I think she toned it down to be on, you know, Joaquin Phoenix's level. Because musically speaking, she is absolutely brilliant. You know, just her, you know, her a cappella stuff, you know, of her, and again, you know, singing some of this music, she is a really powerful singer. You know, and so when I was listening to it, and again, I loved that she did that. That she toned it back a little bit, that she, you know, she didn't belt it out at her full, you know, her full performance level, because it wouldn't have fit the movie. And she would have so outshined him that it would have, you know, it would have been like a, you know, kind of throwing you, it would have thrown you off hearing them together if she was so much, you know, powerful, so much better. You know, so I completely agree with that statement that she backed it down a little bit. And again, the fact that you, when you're listening and you're hearing, oh no, she did really good. That's how good she is. That she could give you a six or a five, and it still sounds like a 10 to us.
Well, I don't think she was, you know, I didn't have the impression that she was trying to do, you know, the encore, everybody stand up and applaud kind of performance. I did think she was trying to stay in the tone of the movie, but I didn't think she ever was off key or anything like that, which is what people tried to make it sound like she, or at least what I heard, was that people said she was purposely singing off key. Now, again, I don't have a trained ear, so maybe she was off key at some point and I didn't notice it, but I didn't hear any of that.
Yeah, I never heard any off-key stuff. I heard her singing at a lower level than what I know she can do, but I never heard, if anybody said off-key, I'd like, okay, tell me when she was off-key, because I never once heard an off-key.
I like that they felt like they were two people that met in a jailhouse singing group.
Yeah.
Which is, I think, what she was going for. I agree. I did not hear her off-key. I felt like she's somebody that they would like belonged in that jailhouse singing group because she was talented, you know, and belonged and was there. I liked that. I didn't feel like she was Lady Gaga. I felt like she was Lee.
Yeah.
And I think that was where she made subtle changes for that purpose. I liked the musical numbers. I thought they were good between the two of them. I thought they were entertaining. I think for Joaquin, who is not going to be Lady Gaga level as far as in his singing capabilities, I thought they did a very good job of her and Arthur playing off each other appropriately in those sequences. I actually quite enjoyed those. I was like, man, I thought the musical part was the part I was going to hate from this. And I liked how they used it. So the numbers I thought were, I am a musical fan, but when it makes sense for a story to be a musical and to have that, I thought this wasn't going to make sense. It actually did for me. And that's the part that I'm blown away about on this one. I'm like, oh, they're using that for these dreams. And they feel like these two that have met in this jailhouse band, and that's all working for me. She definitely felt like she was more talented in it. You know, as far as having been maybe in that musical group longer, but they didn't feel so distant from each other that I was taken out of the fact that this is Lee and Arthur or Lee and Joker in those sequences. And I liked that. I liked the choice. She played that very well. And she's a very talented singer because I really enjoy everything about the musical numbers. I actually really enjoyed. They were fun.
Yeah, that's what I thought too. But paying attention to the musical soundtrack, I found myself not really noticing the actual background score. And I can't tell you anything about the score. I took no notice of it at all. I don't know if you guys did.
No.
No.
Musical numbers, yes. But the score to speak of, they used music in it, but I mean, I didn't find anything bad. I wasn't like, you know, offended by the score or anything like that, but I'm with you. Nothing else stood out for me. Actually, I will say this, in musicals where there is a score, usually if I'm in love in the movie so much, I will seek out the movie score because it's usually released independently of the musical numbers. I'm somebody that will grab both. And this is one that I wasn't even interested in I would seek out the musical numbers because yeah. I liked the musical numbers. I could care less about the score.
What I heard, and I haven't followed up to see if this is correct, what I heard was that Lady Gaga actually did an album where she performs these songs to the best of her ability.
Oh, nice.
Oh, cool.
So that would be interesting to hear. I would be interested in hearing that at some point, but I have not followed up on that just yet. Just moving it along, I liked the direction in this movie. I thought it had a very, very good flow to it. I thought it would, despite the fact that it kind of going from madness to sanity on a regular basis and back and forth, I felt that it had a good narrative flow and I had no problem following it. And I thought that was the biggest key for the director of this movie. And I also liked the cinematography and the kind of the mood that it set, which I thought was very in line with, you know, that 1970s movie feel.
Yeah, they did a good job with what needed to be gritty looked gritty, what needed to be clean looked clean, you know. And again, You know, some of the chaos moments, they'd have these pops of chaos, you know, and then it would be back to normal pop, you know. So they did do a nice little kind of getting the pulse racing and then bring you back down. Unfortunately, one of the things that I was like, I'd get anticipating, I was like, yes, we're going into full comic mode. No, we're not. Okay. Yeah, no, we're not. And it was multiple times like that. But again, there was good acting. Like, I'm drawing a blank on the character's name, but the dwarf, the clown that
Gary
he was
from. Gary Puddles.
Thank you. Thank you. His sequence in the courtroom, again, brilliant acting on all their parts. You know, brilliant acting on all their parts. But part of me wanted it to go just that one step further. And what I mean by one step further is I wanted to see that the character start drinking the Kool-Aid. I wanted him to realize that the Joker had set him free. You know, the reason the Joker didn't kill him was because he was his friend and he was helping him realize that there's so much more that he could be than just this clown. And I wanted that to happen. Now, it didn't happen. You know, and again, the acting that was portrayed on all their parts was wonderful acting. So that's why I can't say this is a bad movie. I just didn't like it, you know, and that sequence. And I was like, yeah, and I'm sitting there and I'm anticipating the turn. I'm anticipating that moment when, you know, we get him, you know, drinking the Kool-Aid and it doesn't happen. And I was like, okay.
How did he get set free though? Because in this film, he didn't. His life was crap after the storm that came in that was Arthur Fleck. So Arthur did all of this, and he actually on the court, on the stand, was talking about how, like, Arthur, you came in and did this, and I was left wrecked.
Yes.
And scared and constantly worried about what was going to happen to me. So he wasn't set free. He was actually put in a prison of sorts based on what happened.
That's the thing. I could see the Joker seeing it. No, you're free now. You're not subjected to, you know, you're not subjected to their rules, their laws. You know, what you see as a prison is really your freedom. Now take it back. You know, you've been given this freedom from having to do things their way. And again, it's all part of the Kool-Aid that his cult. And again, Charles Manson's a great comparison to this because, you know, they could very easily have, you know, kicked it into that kind of mode where you're now free to do what you want and all that kind of crazy, you know, chaos, you know, ensued, you know. But, you know, again, that wasn't the direction of the movie. And in my head, I thought they were going to go that direction. So again, it's part of, you know, it is difficult when you see, like, they could have gone this way and it would have been epic if they would have done this. You know, now we got a good movie, you know, they're talented actors, but it's just that one. It's that little bit that I was like, I wanted this. I wanted X instead of Y. And, you know, and again, those sequences, you know, with, you know, all those courtroom sequences were wonderful courtroom sequences, but I wanted just a little bit more of the chaos. I wanted the Joker, you know?
Mm. Yeah. I mean, I totally understand your frustration.
You guys mentioned the world building in this, where you're talking about what the world looked like. I thought the corrupt prison system, which is something that's rife in Gotham, I thought was used well here. You had these guards that, and it actually leads to Arthur's death. You have these guards that go above, like they can be more violent. They are controlling. There's some unethical pieces. They tolerate Arthur because of the jokes. They find Arthur funny. You know, at times they like laughing at him more than laughing with him, which was an interesting piece. I liked how that was playing out in all of this. And as long as Arthur was this entertaining diversion, they were willing to more than tolerate him, if that makes sense. But there was no respect for Arthur. They didn't really like Arthur. It was more of he was this catalyst that kept them entertained on these long days of watching these inmates. And when Arthur stepped out of line, or when Arthur wasn't offering them the entertainment, he became kind of this push him off to the side. Oh, this guy again, where is my, and I actually liked how the guards were played. I don't know how you guys felt about the prison sequences, but I actually quite, I was surprisingly like that too.
Here's the thing. I am with the prison sequences. Like you, I thought that was a really cool showing the corruption, but again, I wanted more. Okay. So we have a great scene and it's not great that what happened, but it's great how they handled it, where Arthur, you know, where the one prison guard kind of humbles Arthur. And then they end up killing one of the other inmates, you know, and again, they did it by not making it so graphic that you actually see it happening, but you know exactly what happens to Arthur and you know how the other guy died. So great usage of the corruption there. The sequence I wanted was I wanted the Joker in the courtroom to say what happened. I wanted him to look in the camera and say that this guard did blank and then killed this guy. You know, and then to have him say, I know they're going to say I'm crazy, but look at, and then actually break through a great Joker moment where you see his intelligence. Because again, the guard strangled the guy and they're going to basically, we know they're going to say that he hung himself. So all Arthur had to do is just explain, look at the angle of the injury, blah, 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 and just list all the medical stuff that would show why it's not a hanging, you know, and then destroy those prison guards. You know, that for me would be a great Joker moment. Now, obviously, they didn't get anything remotely like that. They didn't, you know, the result of those sequences. One of the big things that did end up breaking Arthur. And did end up him separating himself from the Joker persona because this guy got killed because of him and because of what happened to him. But, you know, in my head, I was like, man, they could have turned this into a really great Joker moment where the Joker gets back at the guy. And then later on, you know, you see the Joker catching up with the guard saying, hello, buddy, you know, and you know, all these this weird stuff is going through my head about what they could have done with this horrific scene, you know, and again, what they did was brilliant act, was brilliant, you know, it was a good sequence on how they didn't give us the graphic and gratuitous, but did the verbal, the audio, and you hear the guy dying. You know, that, I love that. But again, in my head, it's good, but I wanted more, you know? And I think that's my whole point on why I say I don't like this, because I kept wanting more, you know? And so it's a tough emotional thing, roller coaster that I was riding through on this, especially on the second watch through, I got more of appreciation for the movie.
Yeah. I really liked the prison sequences for reasons that I mentioned earlier, where I felt that they were kind of edge of your seat a little bit, because throughout them, you're always wondering, is he going to snap now? And he never snaps.
Right.
In the prison sequences. And I think that's where a lot of people, Jim included, were disappointed, because they were waiting for that snap. But I kind of enjoyed the fact that they kind of teased you with it, but they never brought you there, because if they had brought us there, I think it would have been just very, you know, okay, this is what I expected. I don't feel like it would have been exhilarating or anything like that. I think it would have just been like, okay, yeah, now he went crazy and he showed us how one guy without a weapon could kill four guards or something along those lines. I like the subversion of expectations. So I had no problem with it, and I just liked the suspense you felt through those scenes.
Yeah, and again, they did a brilliant job of building suspense, because I was that guy who wanted to see him snap. I wanted to see him go full Joker on that guard. I wanted to see, you know, just again, that the chaos. I'm with Harley. I want the Joker, you know, and I didn't get the Joker. And that's, I think, you know.
This is where we're going to disagree. You got it outside of the courtroom. You kept looking for it to be Arthur. It wasn't Arthur. In the first film, he inspired everything that you're talking about. It's not occurring where you think it is. It's outside of the building. Everything you're looking for is in the movie. It's in the streets. And that's where Harley was mad. She wanted him to be the leader of what was going on in the streets. This man is a broken man who inspired all of this because of the chaos that he caused in the first film. And he was broken when he was beaten down and thrown in solitary. when he heard his friend die in the hallway, when he came into the courtroom, he wasn't. You're getting the chaos you're looking for. It's in the streets. And the part that I thought was great was when they're pulling away in the car with him, he's in the back. There's an opportunity for him to go with these guys and start a whole cult. You know, I mean, they were worshiping him. They're like, oh my God, it's the guy. We've got the guy. This is so awesome. Stay down, stay down. We're going to protect you. Just stay down. Yeah. He had a window there where he could have had all of that. And he didn't want it. He got out of the vehicle, ran. He wanted to go to her. He wanted a normal life with her. And he was seeing a way of, I'm free now, meaning he was free from all of that. He was also free from the second persona. You know, he's trying not to put the shell around himself. He's just trying to be Arthur Fleck, and she doesn't want him because of it. But the chaos you're looking for, you did have in the film. It just wasn't in the person that you were looking for right. to be in. He inspired all of that. And it happened in the streets instead of where you're thinking. That's the part I liked. I was like, it sounds like I'm like slamming you down. I'm really not. I'm a comic book guy. I normally want like you to follow that in a T, and this does not. And I will not make an argument for people that were looking for that, like yourself, and clearly a lot of other viewers, because this did not do well. I think you're not alone in that piece. I'm shocked at how much I liked what they did that shocked me in this and surprised me. Because I'm normally not that guy. I normally don't like this.
And with me in comic, I don't want people to think it has to 100% follow the comic. I'm okay with deviations and variations on a comic book story. You know, it doesn't, you know, but for me, again, I thought the going full comic book, I think is something this movie needed. It needed that chaos, in my opinion. But again, I can't say it's a bad movie. I'll never say it's a bad movie. You know, especially, again, first watch through, I would have said it's a bad movie. You know, and this, you know, this would have gotten slammed. But after my second watch through, I'm like, this isn't a bad movie. But it's not the movie I wanted. It's not the movie that how I wanted it to go. And that is why I say I don't like it. Because of that, the technical side, the acting, the music, you know, all that stuff they did, it was a good movie. This was a solid movie. But because I wanted something different is where, you know, I'm saying I don't like the movie.
All right. I totally get you. And yeah, I don't think we're disputing your position, just that we just landed in a different place, surprisingly, honestly. unless you have something else to add, I think we can rate this.
Harvey Dent. And I'll make it super quick.
Yeah.
I like the use of Harvey Dent in this as being, you know, the attorney. I don't know if you guys saw it or caught it, when the wall exploded, it was one side of his face got scarred up.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's not the acid or anything like that. I liked that. It was a subtle wink and a nod. It wasn't overdone either. I'm glad they didn't like try to go for some acid or something like that. Just because where, you know, how do you fit that into that? It was explosion. It was meant to be just a little wink and a nod to fans. I appreciated that piece. I just thought it was worth noting because I actually, this was a Harvey Dent because of the fact that we're following Team Arthur on this piece. Harvey Dent was not real likable in this. Yeah. So when the explosion happened, I got to see the side of his face. I didn't feel bad for him. And I was like, oh man, they did kind of a two-face wink and a nod. Yay.
It's more of an Easter egg than a plot point.
Yes, yeah. That's exactly right. And that's exactly what it was. But I thought it was worth noting.
Yeah, no, I agree. So I was surprised by this movie. I expected to absolutely hate it. I expected it to be a chore to watch it. So, you know, expectations come into play. I ended up enjoying watching it. Now, I only watched it once, but I did enjoy it. So really what I come down to in rating this is, do I give it a Jaws 2 or do I give it a Jaws 3? Because I can enjoy a Jaws 3 movie. Mm-hmm. And then I keep coming to the question of, well, does this have rewatchability for me? And It's an interesting perspective because I don't see myself ever saying, you know what, I'm going to sit down and watch this movie. Let me put it on. Let me seek it out. I don't see myself ever doing that. But I do see myself potentially flipping through the channels one day and it's on and landing on it and saying, well, I'm going to watch it a little bit. So it has some extent of rewatchability, but it also is not, again, something I would seek out. So I think I'm going to give it a relatively high Jaws 3. I don't think it quite lives up to a Jaws 2 rating, because that one, you know, Jaws 2 movie, I could seek out. I don't see myself doing that with this. And I think, to be honest, the reason why it's more rewatchable to me is some of the discussions we had as far as the complexity of the characters, but more so just the breaking into song. I think I enjoy that music and I would get a kick out of watching it. And if it was on, I think I would leave it for that reason. So I'm going to give it a high Jaws 3.
It's, and I want to be careful on this one. Your rating and mine are very similar, maybe for similar reasons. I'm surprised at that because I expected to walk in hating this. There were points in times when my first watch through, I probably would have given this a Jaws 2. It's why I watched it again, and I'm glad I did. It does not have a lot of, for me, it does not have a lot of rewatchability other than what you're saying. I like the musical numbers a lot. And if it was on TV, I would leave them on because of the fact that I think they're very, very entertaining. I think I'm done with the story. Like maybe a few years down the road, this might be one, if it's on, I'd watch it again. Or if it's on for the musical numbers, I'd watch it again. But I really, I liked the movie. I really liked the movie, but I do not think there's a lot of rewatchability. I would say for somebody who hasn't seen this, lean into the rules of the first movie because it's kind of established what this world was. And you either like the rules that they established or you don't. And I think that's going to be a major dividing factor in this one. And I get it. It's an interesting film. I'm glad, Jim, that you suggested watching this because I don't know when I would have gotten to it otherwise, because I was not interested at all. And this is normally, I'm the guy that would go in and go see it in the theater. And I bought it for the intention of watching it. And it's been sitting there collecting dust until you suggested watching it for this purpose. So I'm glad I saw it. But I would say it's a Jaws 3 for me. I'd say a high Jaws 3, similar to Paul, because I like the musical numbers so much. It's a Jaws 3 with some Jaws 2 stuff in it. And those musical numbers for me are Jaws 2. I think they're really good and really, really enjoyable. And there's some themes that I was enjoying exploring.
Okay, so with me and the Jaws scale, after the first watching, this was Back to the Future. So what's that, Jaws 15 or something like that? You know, I can't remember.
Yeah.
What?
I think it's 19.
19, okay, yeah. I knew it was a very high number. That was my first watch through, okay?
But that's so bad it's good.
Right. So that's where this was at. You know, then after second watch through, it dropped down again dramatically. And I was trying to find a place for it, where to put it. I couldn't do 4 because, again, it's a good movie. I can't say it's not a good movie because it was great. It was very good acting. There were parts of it, as I said, I loved. So I could not do 4. So I was then debating between 2 and 3. And even going into this conversation, I still didn't have a solid number, 2 or 3. Mm-hmm. But I was thinking, I knew this discussion would be where I actually would figure out where I was going to put it. So I'm going to go along with the group and say, put it at a 3, you know, because again, it's a good movie. I don't think I will ever watch it again unless I have to. And if I'm channel surfing, I will keep channel surfing. You know, unless it's that courtroom scene, or unless it's one of the musical numbers I like, maybe I would stop for that. But so for me, this is a solid, you know, this is a, you know, a 3. And I'm very happy we had a chance to talk about this because this was a fun conversation.
Yeah, I feel the same way. And I'm glad you suggested it, Jim. And yeah, Thanks for coming on and talking to us about it.
And here's a recommendation for both of you on musicals. If you've never seen it, it's called Something Rotten.
Oh yeah, I've seen it.
Yeah, if you haven't seen it, it's a good musical. What?
I saw it on Broadway.
Oh, you did? Perfect. Okay.
Me too.
With my kids.
Oh, nice. Because again, that's the element of Something Rotten is just the where they're discussing the nature of what a musical is. That's probably one of my favorite scenes in a musical ever. Is the, you know, that moment when they, what's a musical number? That's absolutely brilliant.
Yeah, I enjoyed that very much. So I guess that's it for this particular movie. And again, thanks, guys. And thank you, everybody, for listening. And we'll see you next time. Bye-bye. All right.
You should see it out there. They're all going crazy for you. They're saying you're a bad influence on me. Well, guess what?
That's life! That's life! Funny as it seems, some people get their kicks stuck stepping on a dream.
You are no different than any of those people that underestimated me.
Also, don't do this to yourself. It isn't you.
It isn't me. So you don't think this is me? Well, maybe, maybe you don't know who I really was.
Arthur Fleck is a monster. And his depraved acts led to riots all over the country.
Everything's gonna work out. You're Joker.
Uh-oh. I'm in trouble.
We're gonna build a mountain.